91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. We're at your service today with South Florida gardening experts. If you've gardened before in northern climes, a few modifications are needed to get good results in the subtropics. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We'll visit with Dr. John Pipoli, a Broward County Urban Horticultural Extension Agent, as well as Terry Goldsmith, President of the Florida Master Gardeners of Broward County. Rainy season has come, and it's been unpredictable. You may want to adapt rain barrels to keep some for later use. Learn how. We'll have advice on how to fertilize, grow organically, fight pests, and use native plants in landscaping. Of course, we'll be taking your calls. And we return 7 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Welcome to Monday, Bonnie.
Well, thank you. Same to you. Did you have a nice Easter?
Yes, I did. It's Topical Currents at your service this hour. South Florida gardening is our topic, and we have experts on hand. We always enjoy the company of the president of Master Gardeners of Broward County. She's Terry Goldsmith. Welcome back.
Nice to be here. Happy Easter.
Lots of info today.
Good to have you. And, of course, the encyclopedia of South Florida horticulture, Dr. John Pipoli.
Walking encyclopedia.
Walking encyclopedia. He's a Broward County-based urban horticulture and natural resources extension agent, University of Florida, part of Parks and Recreation. And welcome to you.
Thank you very much. I'm really happy to be back here again.
Great and you may you. Want our number if you have questions, 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN, and email, that's radio@WLRN.org.
That's 800-743-9576. Okay, I have a burning question. I was going to say the rainy season is right around the corner, but it never ended, as far as I can see, in winter. So how is that affecting what we do in terms of planting or all the things we're supposed to do now, or fertilizing or what?
We are 6 weeks behind, almost to the day.
Okay.
So that means the mangoes are flowering later. That means that the onset of the rains will be a little later. We might be in for a little bit of a dry spell, so we have to watch what's going on. If you have mangoes that haven't flowered yet, you may have to water them a little more than you would usually do, because mangoes really don't like to be wet a lot.
So that's going to be some really deep watering, though, to get to the roots of those.
Not so deep, I'd say. You know, it's like a gallon for every 2 inches diameter that it has at the ground at the base, so you can put two or three gallons, maybe four, on a 6 foot tree at a crack, and that's enough.
What about the temperature, John? It's been seasonably warm.
Everyone's confused. Yeah, there are two problems with the temperature regime, and that is that the pollinators are not as active as they would be. Like normally for mangoes, there are little flies that do the majority of the pollination, and bees are secondary, important but secondary.
Oh.
Not the principal pollinators. So if you smell the smell of a mango flower, you'll see it's kind of a little funky smell, and that's what attracts these little general flies that come over to it. So pollination may be a real problem. And for those people that are mango enthusiasts, you might want to invest in a box of cotton swabs, and you may have to walk from one plant to another. I'm just saying.
And they're under 15 feet tall.
Pardon me?
And spread the pollen?
And do some hand pollination. One of my mangoes, a Neelum, had all its flowers last Thursday, and Friday it had one left. They all fell.
And why is that?
That's because the pollinator didn't visit them, so they did their thing and dropped off. So that means no mangoes from my Neelum.
So those piles of blossoms that are on the ground, that means a non-mango?
That means a non-mango. Every flower that falls is a non-mango.
Can I just ask a quick question about pollination, since you mentioned bees and pollination? So, because I really have a question. We hear how important honeybees are, and they're endangered, and we also hear often of these people that remove hives. How do you identify Which are the the good bees from the bad bees, if you will?
Well, you know, we have native bees as well, but among the honeybees, there's a huge Africanized honeybee program from, you go to freshfromflorida.com, the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services has all kinds of hotlines about that.
Isn't it aggression, though, basically?
It's aggression, yeah. They, you know, the Africanized bees will do the same work as the other bees. The problem with them is that they like to nest in places that are not convenient to us, and they pose a threat if there are too many of them in one place.
Well, and they behave differently.
And they behave. They're very aggressive and very territorial.
So you mean...
For example, if you find a honeybee nest in your sprinkler box, no normal honeybee would put a nest in a sprinkler box. So you can pretty much bet that those are Africanized bees. And if you have younger people, kids around and things like that, you need to get rid of them. You really do. I mean, they're bringing more bees down from the north all the time. The Africanized bees actually come up from Mexico and go around the golf course and end up in Florida. So that's how they get here. And they're flying and they're moving and they're very, very aggressive. We don't yet have a protocol to manage Africanized bees in the same way that they manage the European non-Africanized bees. They're working on a protocol in Brazil where they're all Africanized at this point. And there are several other Central American countries that are involved with it, with the USDA there to try to head off a problem, you know.
What most sets them off to be aggressive?
It's genetics.
I mean, in any human action, if you just get too close, if there's any color.
You can even look at them flying around. Even when their behavior from a distance is different.
Yeah.
They seem agitated.
As soon as they sense movement, they get defensive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that you can't play around. If you see a big nest, and it's illegal to move them if it's determined that they're behaving in an aggressive way. So you get a pest control.
So you don't
operator.
Give them away to someone else.
No, you can't. No, it's against the law. Yeah, so it's a very touchy thing. But I think you can all rest assured that more bees that are not Africanized are being brought in. And the idea is for many of the beekeeping associations want to encourage people to learn to be beekeepers, to get marked queens, which are not Africanized, to be in hives, to flood the areas with European ones so they'll outcompete the Africanized ones. Because the problem is if you set up a beehive and you're not careful, within a month an Africanized queen will invade that hive, kill the normal queen, and take over and then make all Africanized.
Well, it can. It's not guaranteed.
It can.
Yeah.
But it happens. So
there's
a lot of
intrigue.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, it is. It's a very complicated thing, and it's something that all of us are coming
we
to grips with.
We need some creepy music.
Our number 800-743-9576 again.
But thanks for asking, and it's something that we get questions about all the time.
Yeah, it's so confusing because
yeah,
you want to...
Bees are
Save
good,
the bees.
Though.
Yeah, bees are good.
But the rest, either one can do the job, but the Africanized bees are so tough to handle.
Okay.
Now, as we began the program, we promised we'd have info on rain barrels.
Yes.
And also how you can use your air conditioning condensation and get creative with your watering.
Well, now we have posted a resource that you can print or download that we're talking about today, showing different types of rain barrel systems and setups, and that's at broward.org/parks.
So this takes water off of your roof?
Off yes. of your roof, yes. You can even capture it with rain chains or gutters.
What are rain chains?
Rain chains are, well, they can be. I have one on my house, decorative little metal lilies, actually. And it goes down from a downspout just the way a gutter would, except that the water just gently caresses the flowers, and sometimes they make sounds, and they're very, very feng shui.
What about when it really rains?
When it really rains, you need a gutter. That's been my experience.
Yeah. Is it legal everywhere to have rain barrels?
It depends on your community. Some of them require significant strapping. So here's what we recommend to everyone. Step one, check with your homeowners association.
Okay.
If they're not prohibited by them, check with your city code inspection officer. And that person will be glad to tell you what's required if you want to put a rain barrel in. Because some of them you have to mount them to the wall. And since you have to put them up on bricks, some of them require that you cement the bricks to the ground so they won't move.
And
it's
then,
almost the way
same
with
strap them down. There.
Yeah, strap
kind
them
of
down.
Like they do an air conditioning unit.
Yeah, just like
it's
an air conditioning
same
unit, same kind of thing. And the main thing we want people to remember to do is to filter the water that comes down from the roof, and to realize that you cannot drink it, whether the container is food grade or not. You never know what's in your roof, what air contaminants are there, what planes went overhead.
So you can only use it for watering.
For watering or maybe washing your car.
Right.
Or, you know, other non-potable purposes.
On the other hand, though, I think you probably would always want to get a barrel that, if you're going to use a recycled barrel, that was food safe use, just because it could be chemicals or pesticides.
So this is treated as though it were gray water.
Correct.
Yes. Correct. Exactly. Right. Yeah. There are some barrels that are able to be cleaned that are from the foam that's used to adhere barrel tiles to roofs, because there's a solvent that will clean it super clean, and our master gardener Art Constantino's had that checked.
Yeah, he's an expert on that. You know, I also found that there are sustainability centers in various cities where you can call them, and oftentimes they have these recycle or upcycle barrels, food safe barrels from places like Publix where they had lemon powder drink mix in it, and they drop them off there and you can pick them up, and of course you have to convert them. You know, you have to set them up as with the pipes and so forth to set them up as a rain barrel, but you can get those for free.
What is that website again where people, it's Broward.org/gardens/parks. Broward.org/parks.
Yeah, and then you'll see gardening with WLRN.
Okay.
Okay, let's take a telephone call or two. Our number 1-800-743-9576. This is Christopher. Christopher in Miami. Hi there.
Hi, how are you? Happy Easter, happy spring.
Happy spring.
Thank you.
Same to
you.
Thank you.
I have a question about a pest. I do my yard naturally, and I have raised a garden with some plants, decorative plants, and I always get this resurgence of the grasshoppers, the lubber grasshoppers. I've tried the bran flakes that are coated with that fungus that they're supposed to eat and then die. I don't like to I've never hired anybody to spray around because I don't want to kill other things. So is there another way to deal with these? Aren't they an invasive species, first of all, and how do you deal with them? Mm-hmm.
I guess I won't mention the rapid vertical deceleration or compression, because that's how we do it over at the extension office.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's really tough to do it naturally. You know, the lubber grasshoppers are so large and so strong.
You can get them early, though, can't you? When
they're
little
black
guys?
They don't move around very much in the morning while the dew's still on the lawn, although I don't like to walk around in wet lawn. You can go and pick them up and squish them. That's about it that I know of.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'll be on the lookout for the little one.
Okay. Yes.
Well, it's Topical Currents at your service. We're talking about South Florida gardening. We'll take a short break and be back with more.
Welcome back. We're at your service about gardening in South Florida. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and we're with Terry Goldsmith, president of the Florida Master Gardeners of Broward County, and Dr. John Pipoli, who's the walking encyclopedia. Better way to put it, just
shorter title.
Yeah. And we have lots of calls and emails, so we're going to ask you to be patient.
And let's go back to the phones. Next up is Arthur. Arthur in Hollywood, you're up.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Last time we had hurricanes, the county started giving away some mango trees, which I picked up, planted, and about 4 years after planting it, we got a crop of mangoes coming from it. Since then, we haven't gotten anything. I have done nothing as far as fertilizing. What can I do to start getting food again?
The first thing you have to do is take a keyhole saw, put it perpendicular to the ground, that is, align it with the trunk, push it into the soil, and cut across, and see if you hit girdling roots, because that is, what you're describing is a tree that had girdling roots when it was planted.
What are girdling roots?
They're roots that when they don't move it up, they grow in a circle. So the plant does okay for a couple years, but then it can't get new roots out to get more nutrients as it accumulates mass, and then it starves itself. and you start getting poor performance after that.
You have to think about how often you buy a plant that's in a pot and you take it out and you see those circling
roots. Right.
Yeah. You don't slash them when you take them out of the pot. Most of the time they stay that way. They can fall over
that's
in a hurricane.
That's why you shorten them when you repot.
Right. Right. Exactly.
And see, after about 3 years or so, if a plant starts, a tree starts to perform poorly 90% of the time, it's either you buried it. That means you planted it too deep.
Too deep, right.
So you have to look, where do the roots start? If the roots start at soil level, you're okay. If it's 2 inches below, you have to unearth it, pull it up, because that's the other way to starve the thing, because the roots will actually go up at the ends if it's buried too deeply. And either way, you won't get efficient transport of nutrients up the tree. Therefore, it won't have the energy to flower.
But can you ungirdle an established tree?
Well, you can take a chance and cut the roots at 4, 8, 10, and 2.
A clock.
Around the base.
With what sort of saw?
A keyhole saw. The saws that are like wood saws on one side and flat on the other. And you just put them in the ground and cut them.
That sounds like a long day.
It is a long day, yeah. And hopefully you do this when the tree has less than 3 inches diameter. If the tree has less than 3 inches diameter, you have a chance of saving it.
All right,
Arthur, good luck. Get that saw sharpened up.
Going to Publix and getting the mangoes.
Yeah, okay.
We have an emailer that might lead to something you wanted to talk about. Last year, I bought a house in Miami Beach. It's Charles.
Okay.
With a gorgeous, huge banyan tree, which provides so much shade. The problem is, can't find any plants that will grow under a huge amount of shade under the banyan tree.
Okay.
I've tried a lot, including bromeliads, but nothing. I'd love something with flowers on it. I wonder if the soil is in Miami Beach is too sandy, which brings us to shade plants, which you wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, flowering though. If there's no sun,
it's
we were talking
flower.
About that earlier. It's best to find decorative plants that just look nice without the flowering.
Yeah.
Even like we were talking, what was it? The peanut, flowering peanut, which
flowering
is a great
peanut.
Brown cover. And I don't know why bromeliads wouldn't. Maybe the root system is too thick.
I think they'll grow there, but they won't be necessarily flowering, and maybe that's what he's worried about.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now there's a purple bromeliad that grows as a ground cover, a little small thing. That you can go to any of the larger nurseries and they'll have it. That'll have purple leaves at least. And then many of the ferns, like a cinnamon fern, that's a native species, a royal fern. They have a very fine, wispy-looking sterile leaves, and then they have a shoot that comes up with all the spores that's cinnamon in color. So you have these little cinnamon things sticking up, and it looks really attractive. The leatherleaf fern is completely resistant to salt. It will grow on the beach just fine. And it has huge portions of the leaves with the spores, so it's brown against dark green, and it looks really attractive.
That sounds nice.
So there I would start to think about ferns that are salt resistant.
Okay,
next up we have a Hialeah caller. He's got a bit of a cleanup problem, and this is Juan in Hialeah.
Yes, how are you? I have a vegetable garden in the backyard. It's a small little square plot, and unfortunately some of the cats in the neighborhood use it as a litter box. And I'm trying to find out if there's anything I can do, like you plant it or to get the cats away and grow some vegetables.
A lot of the things with cats involve making fences and kind
of... Physical obstructions,
number one. Number two is to change to a grow pot system and put the grow pots up on benches.
Or grow bags.
And you put them up on benches, and that way they're off the ground. And
I would think any raised bed. Do you think maybe it's too sandy in there? Is that why they're drawn to it?
Yeah, I think they're drawn to that, and that it's kind of private, and it's not hostile anyway. So if you were to elevate the bed, then they're going to stay underneath and it won't hurt anything. And they won't, you just, you know, slick up the legs.
And put sand underneath and you're all set.
And then you're all set. Yeah, a neighbor of mine had a problem with iguanas coming, and he made a raised bed. And then he took just simple axle grease and greased all the legs. And the iguanas can't get up it. And as much as they want to, they waste half their day trying to go up. But nothing.
So you protect and also get entertainment.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like a regular show.
Oh, how nice. I'm thinking, Juan, you know what you could do? I don't. You won't like my solution. I won't even tell you. No,
it's really disgusting, you know. Because there's no way we're going to eat anything off of that. So, and then these cats are like acrobats; they can get into anything.
Yeah, but if you have it up on a platform with legs on it that you grease, they can't get up there either. They're not after the plants; they're after a place to do their business.
Right,
so
exactly.
They'll
right.
go under the bench, and
that's
then you
right.
don't care
that's
about
right.
that. You just rake it out.
You know, you don't have to grease it either. You can use PVC pipe around the legs.
Right,
they can't get up that either.
Right.
Well, I'm just thinking to keep the iguanas off because the iguanas can go up the plastic.
Right.
But the truth is the cats don't want the vegetables
no.
at all.
No,
they just want the sand.
They want the sand.
So as
yeah.
long as the vegetables
are
in the
air. They leave the vegetables alone. They just leave us something behind that I don't want either.
Yeah. Right. So if you raise it, your vegetables
out.
Will be safe.
And put sand underneath.
Right.
I'll give it a try.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, if in the sand underneath you put some ammonia...
Yeah.
The cats won't go anywhere near ammonia. Nowhere.
Oh,
you just spray some ammonia
good.
Over
and,
there.
Yeah. And that won't hurt them or anything, would it?
No. They won't even go near
just
it.
Just avoid it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a plan. Okay.
Okay.
Good luck.
Good
okay.
luck.
Thank you.
Sure. Let's see. We have a caller who wants to know if they need a permit to have a beehive in their backyard.
Yes.
Yeah.
And as of a brand new law.
That's for all municipalities or is it county?
Statewide.
Statewide.
Yeah, there was a new law passed last year owing to people mismanaging bees and ending up causing public nuisances with Africanized bees.
So it's the same for all the counties?
It's the same for all the counties. Okay, there's a 1-800 number on the freshfromflorida.com. Just put honeybees and the link will come up and then you call to find out how you... There's about a 4-step process. It's not really a lot. They just want you to know... They want to know that you know what you're doing
stuff.
And you're buying
yeah.
a queen that has, they even have numbers.
That's not Africanized.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Right.
Yeah. I have a new garden. I was wondering if you could give me advice on the best mulches.
I like eucalyptus.
Eucalyptus is absolutely fantastic. And Melaleuca, if you can get it, is fantastic.
How about
too.
Pine bark?
Pine bark is even better for those yards that are really basic. If you can get the compressed ones instead of the regular ones, they'll last another 6 months longer.
For sure. But if you want to put
and
it in
acidic.
Places.
Acidic.
Right.
We're looking for more acidity.
Absolutely. Then. So you throw that all the coffee grounds in there. You use the pine bark, and if you can get
throw your coffee grounds in the mulch.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, for sure.
And
yeah.
if you can get pine needles to mix in with it, the needles are so full of resin they break down just as slowly as the bark, and they're wonderful.
The only thing about the bark is you don't want to use it in high traffic areas. It's
yeah.
it's difficult to walk.
Does
on.
The resin even prevent weeds or insects? Or?
If it seals over, you know, after it rots in place, it'll help.
They
yeah.
stop germination for a while. I
yeah.
mean, they lose their effectiveness over time. But that pine bark, I have both eucalyptus and pine bark in my yard. And it's true. The eucalyptus goes about 6 months. The pine bark lasts almost twice as long.
Mm.
Okay.
An emailer, Clay cleared his property. It was overgrown with weeds. And until he gets it replanted, what's the best way to keep weeds from springing right back?
Solarize.
Yep.
What does that
clear
mean?
Clear plastic. Put down clear plastic.
Okay.
Everybody thinks black plastic is better, but clear plastic is better.
You water it first. You put clear plastic down, and then you're cooking the soil.
Yeah,
which
literally.
Is, you'll also kill all the harmful
nematodes
that may be in the soil. So when you're ready to do something serious, you're ready to go.
If you do That's it for it. 6 months, you probably get rid of a lot of invasives, too.
Oh, absolutely. It'll kill all the seeds. Roast all the seeds. It's like putting it in an oven.
Yeah. Okay, Clay. There you go.
Okay. Next caller, Steve in Jupiter. Hello there.
Yes. Hello there. I have a small strangler fig that I acquired from MacArthur Park. And I transplanted it to a larger pot on my patio, and I want to keep it growing like a bonsai plant without it becoming too big. Can I do this? What do I have to do?
I mean, if he constrains the base of it, the root system, won't it sort of keep it smaller?
It'll keep it a little smaller. There's what I would do if I were you is get a hold of the Bonsai Society because they have specific protocol for trimming regimens. It's not only keeping the roots small and pruning them, it's when you prune it and how often you prune it and what you do after you prune it that allows people to miniaturize these trees. And the Bonsai Society, if you just Google American Bonsai Society, and they have protocols for that.
Okay. And also, is a strangler fig and a what's the other name for a strangler fig. It has two names.
Ficus aurea.
Okay.
It's a ficus, then.
Yes, yeah. It is.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for calling. Right. We're with the president of the Master Gardeners of Broward County, Terry Goldsmith, and the Dr. John Pipoli, the Broward County-based urban horticulture and natural resources extension agent, among other things. 800-743-9576, 800-743-9576, radio at WLRN.org. We'll be right back.
And we're back, Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We're talking South Florida gardening on Topical Currents at your service. Next caller, Whitney.
Hello.
In Fort Lauderdale. Hi there.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
We have an iguana infestation. We're waterfront, and I came in on the tail end of the raised bed garden suggestion. However, we've got... it goes well beyond just saving the vegetables. Is there anything practical that can be done to keep iguanas away?
They eat pretty much almost everything.
They eat almost everything. The recommendations from the county are to first replace your... first, get rid of your hibiscus, because that's what they really love. As long as if there's no hibiscus around, you'll have fewer of them. The second thing is plant as many plants with milky sap, whether it's sticky milky sap or runny milky sap, doesn't matter. They will not eat anything that has white sap. Then the third thing is, and this is going to take some work, and tell your HOA you're doing it, hang some CD-ROMs on strings around your yard, and the changing reflection of the light will startle them. Once they get used to it, then you move them. So you can stay one step ahead of them by scaring them that way.
You can also use a mirror-like decorative object. You don't have to, if you're on the water, your neighbors probably aren't going to want to be looking at CD-ROMs.
That's true.
But mirrored pieces will work. I've done that in my own yard, and they're decorative, and you can move them around on stakes.
Okay. And as far as the gardening, we do have some space that we had once grown vegetables in, and apparently rosemary is the only thing they won't eat. Is it a bad idea to rig up some sort of electric, like cattle tape or something like that?
They're going to find a way around it, or dig under it, or go around it. The other thing you might consider is having a mint garden. Because rosemary is a mint, right? And you could get lovely tropical sage, which is a red mint.
We had that for a while.
Okay.
It invaded the world, and we had to weed it out.
Okay, and then the other one
it self-seeds everywhere.
Yeah, there's an azure blue mint that's another native species that would work well, too.
Will it grow in the same conditions as the rosemary?
Yeah, and then American beautyberry is a mint as well.
Beautyberry is a great plant.
And they won't bother
that
at all.
Beautiful. The birds love them.
All right.
Well, thank you very much for the advice, and we'll see what works in the end.
Good luck.
All right, take care.
Can you address, because we have two emailers, one with gopher problem and how harmful are they, and another with snail problem.
Okay, well, the gopher thing is a really serious thing, and I think what we're going to recommend is that they go to the University of Florida Electronic Document Information Source, EDIS. So you go EDIS, IFAS. IFAS.
Just Google UFL. EDIS. It'll pop up.
Yeah, EDIS. When you get it up there, then put gophers. Pocket gophers are supposed to have been eliminated in South Florida by another pest. The other question was...
the snails.
So
for the gophers, just go to
of Florida's EDIS system, and they have five or six papers that tell you exactly what to do, and it
for
involves
gophers.
Yeah, you can do traps, you can flood the burrow system. There's a bunch of different things you can do.
Are gophers harmful?
What they do is they'll tear up your yard and tear up your irrigation system and make a mess of what's underneath the foundation of your house.
So they chew through the PVC to get to the water that's in there?
Sometimes when they're in a corner.
Otherwise,
they'll go under.
What are they on earth for?
They go under. They live under the ground, and they come out and eat little pieces of vegetation and fruits and then go back under the ground.
So they aerate the soil somewhat.
Somewhat, but it's all... They eat, well, they'll eat little, you know, little outdoor cockroaches and other little things like that, too. The deal is that, that when they tunnel so close to the surface that they tear up your lawn and tear up the...
Oh, like the cartoons bed. Where you see it.
Exactly.
Only that is funny.
Yeah, so, right. So it's not a pretty sight.
Okay, and the other one's snails.
The snails, well, there's a whole procedure with snails. You can take a little pan and fill it with beer and bury it around the plants that they like to see. You can get sluggo.
Sluggo works great. I've used it.
It's a little snail bait. You put the little things around the plant. Doesn't hurt your pets. And the snails will eat it with zest. It attracts them, and then they're dead.
It absorbs the moisture. It looks like gooey.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, it's less disgusting than the beer idea.
Yeah, because the beer thing gets
it
nasty.
It really is disgusting.
Yeah. Okay. I wonder if mosquitoes would breed in beer.
No.
Oh, alcohol,
just
no.
Just water. Okay.
Yeah, the yeast stuff really does a number on it.
And next up, it's Jeannie in Miami. We're getting our lesson on bees today. Jeannie, go ahead.
Oh, hi. I'm confused with the bees. I had some bees make a home in a upside-down pot, so I called the agricultural agency, and they sent me a list of bee removers.
Right.
And I thought, you know, it was illegal. I didn't want to kill my bees. And it was a sort of... anywhere from $50 to $500 to do this, and they were all going to kill them.
Yep.
And I thought, that's ridiculous. I know how to kill things. I want to save them. So I finally, by word of mouth, found a really nice gentleman. It turns out my bees were Italian bees, and talking to some of these really cool bee people, they like the African bees because the African bees don't carry all the diseases the other bees do. I didn't even know bees had diseases. And then I saw a YouTube thing by Bill Mullison teaching permaculture in Africa, and they were having a top bar beehive and handling it without having suits on or anything. And there's one part, there's a young African kid being shown by Bill Mullison how to use this, and he looks down and he says, "These are African bees." And they started laughing. He said, "You know, in America, they're afraid of them." So I thought that was interesting.
Okay, Jeannie, we have a lot of shaking heads in the studio. Let's find out what they have to say.
I know bees are allergic. Anyone who's allergic, any bee is very bad. Right. I know that. But I was surprised that there's not the big fear among the beekeepers about these African bees, which... you know, I thought it was pretty cool.
Okay. I would say if you could, just because it's on the internet does not mean that it's true.
John?
I'm talking about Bill Mullison.
Yeah, right. Well, African bees.
Of permaculture. I'm not talking about some crazy kid on there. I'm talking about someone who's an academic.
Okay, John?
Africanized bees are not the same as African bees. Africanized is a term because there were bees that had been selected from African stock bred in Brazil to be super honey producers that escaped and were so aggressive because they hadn't tested their behavior that they started wreaking havoc with the continent and then the Central America and then the U.S. So you're not comparing apples to oranges. The second thing is 99% of common people don't know how to handle those kinds of bees. Dr. William Kern, who's a member of the Bee Committee, very influential member, the second in charge of bees for the state, is just learning now how to handle Africanized bees because they are so aggressive and come out with such ferocity.
So say that again. Africanized bees are not necessarily bees from Africa, correct?
No, they are descendants of the selected germplasm that was taken from Africa and bred for hundreds of generations in Brazil.
Okay.
But remember, a generation, it may be a couple of days, right?
Right, right.
So they built a thing in the National Institute for Investigations of Amazonia, and then these things escaped accidentally.
Is this like a Jurassic Park thing? Yeah.
Exactly. Because no one knew.
An experiment gone awry.
Well, it's like introducing the rabbits in Australia. Nobody knew they were going to take over everything. So... just because the Africanized and African are two different deals, and the problem with a lot of these websites is they're not research-based. So because they're not, no one's checked field results and have meaningful statistics. That's
how did Jeannie know, or how did the person that she was with know that they were from Italy specifically?
To tell you the truth, I can't believe that. I really don't know.
I'm imagining these bees even yelling
genetic,
chow.
Even genetic fingerprints.
They were well dressed.
Genetic fingerprints won't even tell you that they're from Italy as opposed to the to somewhere else.
So you doubt remember, it.
Yeah, because remember, Italy has seven environments. They have a subtropical, and then they have the Tyrol that's temperate meadow, alpine meadow.
Maybe it just said shipped from Italy.
They might have said shipped from Italy. Yeah.
We have a lot of callers.
Sure, sure.
Let's finish up with bees. We have a caller who wants to know if killing bees is illegal.
No, it isn't. What's illegal is to move bees that are not verified as European honeybees. So if you have them in a pot, the chances that they're Africanized are high. That's why you would remove them and kill them.
But if they're in a tree,
you don't know. You have to decide.
Right.
Their behavior.
I mean, I called a licensed beekeeper, and they came and they took them away, and I felt better about that because they're going to take them away either way. And
but if they're in a sprinkler box or they're in your
right
wall,
in a weird place,
you know they're not going to be a normal bee because normal bees would never live there.
Okay.
And next up, we have Mike in Aventura. Mike, you're up.
Hi. I grow tomatoes in my backyard. I have large green caterpillars with a horn that are devastating them. I don't like to use pesticides. What do you suggest?
You pick them off and move them. Mechanical. And there's actually something you can do that's really easy.
They don't sting you or anything?
No.
Okay.
I've been throwing them in the neighbor's yard, but I mean, I've got a lot of them, and they really
that's nice.
You know what? They're tomato hornworms, and they're going to produce a really beautiful moth. So you can either kill them one at a time. You can use a thing called the Bacillus thuringiensis, BT. That's all I have to tell the people at the box store. I want some BT. And when you spray that on the foliage, it won't hurt us. But what it does is it has a hormone in it, and it won't let the larva turn into an adult. So they run out of gas and die.
But you know, the good point that you didn't mention there, though, he might not know, is that's a caterpillar-specific.
Yeah, it is.
Pesticide, which is really nice. When you go to anybody who goes out to kill something, they want to buy a pesticide, you should always get a target-specific pesticide, not a broad spectrum, because the broad spectrum kills everybody, even the good guys.
Right.
And does that? And what about animals, birds?
Doesn't hurt it at all.
Birds,
no, because
cats, dogs.
Insect hormones are different from other animal
I
hormones.
See.
And then finally, a neighbor of mine planted potatoes. The potato leaves have much more of the toxin that these larva desire, and she put them over there, and they all stayed. It was fine.
How funny is that? That's great.
Because she's one of these don't kill a bug people,
right.
You know?
Okay.
What's wrong with them, John?
No problem.
Okay.
Okay. We're going to take a short break on our program. It's Topical Currents at your service. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to our At Your Service on South Florida Gardening program on Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Terry Goldsmith, president of the Florida Master Gardeners of Broward County, and Dr. John Pipoli, who is the extension agent. Okay. What we want to tell you is we have a board full of calls and we have lots of emails and we may not get to all of you. And
right.
So we have a solution.
We have a solution. We have a legion of volunteers out there sitting at mastergardener@broward.org. mastergardener@broward.org. And just tell me of an WLRN airing question and they'll answer you. It is volunteer, so give them a 24 to 48 hours to look it over. And we'll come back to you with either a question or information.
Can you
so
send
in case.
Pictures?
And John?
You can send cell phone pictures too. That's very good because it makes it so much easier for us to diagnose a bug or a weed or a fungus or any kind of problem.
Okay.
Yeah, just make sure we know where you are and what you're having the problem with and take a picture as best as you can.
Right.
And then we'll get back to you. And there's also, for those that have problems with email, you can call 954-357-5121 and leave a message because our master gardeners that answer the email will receive that telephone message as an email.
Okay. All right.
All right. Let's go to the phones again.
Thank you.
This is Susanna
okay.
In Miami. Hi.
Yeah. First of all, about the lubber grasshoppers, I had them in our yard for 2 years, and I stomped a lot of them out. I did not use any sprays or anything. And then eventually I finally figured out where they were nesting, and I began removing the bromeliads, the plants where they were nesting. And now I do not see any grasshoppers at all. I have not sprayed, and I see no nymphs at all.
Good job.
say I have no grasshoppers.
So say that again, because we have an emailer, Amy, who wants to know how to get rid of them, and because the, she says Orkin is spraying, but the nymphs are back.
I was very diligent about removing the grasshoppers by hand and stamping on them.
Oh.
And then I removed, as I went, as I in the fall, I removed the bromeliads where they were nesting.
Okay.
Those plants that hold water.
Yes.
I removed the plants from the yard and I put them in the trash. They were holding grasshoppers, and I removed every as many as possible. And now I see no grasshoppers.
Great. Okay. Also, crinum lilies are a favorite. So if you have an infestation, if you have a lot of crinum lilies that are crowded,
it's probably it.
Thin them out. Have just a couple, and then you won't make a home for them.
You're a citizen scientist.
Really?
Good
well,
job.
I tell you, it was quite an accomplishment, I felt, and I see not one nymph.
Come and be trained as a master gardener.
Join us.
Well, I am a master gardener in Miami, and so I decided that we're not going to spray.
Fantastic.
And I had to overcome quite a bit of a, you know, quite a few people in my house.
Okay.
But anyway, that worked. And then the second thing is about the Melaleuca. I'm from Louisiana, and I'm used to planting things in my mulch, in my mulch. And when I misunderstood, I think, something about the Melaleuca. I can't plant things in the mulch because the Melaleuca has something that prevents things from germinating.
Right. You plant whole plants in Melaleuca mulch. You can't plant seeds.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's no problem.
That needs to be clarified to people that Melaleuca is not meant to plant seeds.
Yeah.
Just plants. Okay, we have to run. Thank you, Susanna.
Okay, all right. That's all I need to say.
Thank
Goodbye.
You.
Bye.
Bye.
And
thank
we
you.
Move along to Lorraine in Delray. Hey there.
Hi, this is Lorraine, and I have been growing orchids on my patio for many years. They come back repeatedly really nicely. But this year, I found that some of them, when they're just about to bloom, they get like a gnarled kind of disease. They get bumpy and the blooms fall off. And some of them are blooming beautifully, but others aren't anymore. And I was wondering what you think that's caused by. And then the second question is that the orchids that you buy in the stores commercially have so many blooms across the branches. How do you do that on orchids that you're growing at home?
What kind of orchids are you talking about?
All kinds of orchids.
Okay. John?
Could it be fungal,
Terry?
John?
Could be fungal.
We had a lot of rain this over the holiday season, and it caused some things, problems with my orchids. That's why I asked.
Take a picture of those orchids where the flowers are falling off and send it to us, because if the flowering stem is gnarled or you see extra weird things growing that aren't flowers, it's a chance there's pesticide drift from somewhere, usually Roundup, because that's 2,4-D, and that will cause what's called fasciation. The second thing you're talking about, I think you need to... I would send us a picture about that, too. Let's look at things carefully, because there's several things that can happen with orchids.
And you know what I would do, too, is take a picture of a close-up and a picture of the surroundings.
Right, yeah, so
we can
see
what the situation is.
Okay.
Yeah, because, you know, the other thing, too, is the lighting is all off this year. Now, as far as the reason why the ones in the store have so many flowers, they black cloth them and do all kinds of weird light treatments and fool the plant into optimal light conditions, over 14 hours a day of pure light, and then just the right amount of far red light and infrared light. So they fool the plant and put like three growing seasons into one. So if you want to learn how to do that, the American Orchid Society has brochures that will tell you exactly what the steps are to do that. But it's costly. You have to buy the cloths and have a segregated area.
Okay, Lorraine, thanks.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye.
And next up, it's Brian in Miami. Hi.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
Good, go ahead.
Good. So on the front of my house, I'm looking for some nice small trees that could be maintained around 6 feet tall, because it's right in the entrance and it's under the wall sconce. One of the trees I was considering was a Garcinia spicata, and I wanted to see if you thought that was a good pick.
The trouble with the Garcinias is they're what are called ultra tropicals. Now, since, for the last 3 years or so, most of Miami is in what's called Zone 11, which is the subtropical zone. But I need to warn you that if you do get that tree and we get temperatures 40 or below, there's a good chance you'll lose the whole tree.
Got it. And can they be maintained at that height, you know, around 5 feet?
Well, you can maintain them as a shrub if you keep trimming them low. It's not that big of a tree in nature, so I think you could do that.
I appreciate it.
Okay. And we're getting close to the end, so please, we ask our callers to be brief. Nick in Miami. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question about my avocado tree. It's very large, and it's flowering profusely, but it never really sets very many fruit. I'm not sure why.
Do you have any other avocados in the neighborhood?
There's a bunch in the neighborhood, and I have another one in my yard. So I don't know why it's not setting fruit.
It could be that the bees are off, you know, because of this 6 weeks late business. That could be it. You know, avocados have A flowers and B flowers, and the pollination has to go from A to B or it doesn't work. So you might have a problem there. This year, I don't know what's going to happen.
Okay. Can I hand pollinate it maybe?
You could if you have the patience to do that, but remember look for the two different kinds of flower. You'll be able to tell them apart.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Pamela wants to know why she has bougainvilleas, trying to grow them up, not out. She gets 6 foot branches growing off in a couple of months. Did a pruning job, cutting back anything lateral. Now the plants are taking shape, but not blooming. Well, I see other places where branches are only 8 to 12 inches long and blooming. How can she encourage flowers?
Is it in full sun is one question, I guess. Yep. Okay. And I did the same thing with my bougainvilleas, and it just takes diligence.
Full sun and Epsom salt.
Ah.
Magnesium sulfate helps them a lot.
Okay. You got to have sun, though.
Yeah, you have to have full sun.
You put the Epsom salt on the soil or you dissolve
it? On the soil around it and water it in.
Okay.
All right. And we'll go again to... Melanie in Boca. Hi there.
Hi. I'm having a problem with my garden bed. I believe I have nematodes again. I had them a few years ago, and I did the solarizing. I put the plastic down, and it seems like it's back again. I just wanted to know, like, what's the best way to do it? The last time I did it, I just put the plastic down. When I lifted it up in the fall, I just planted immediately. Can I, like, when I pull up the plastic, can I... you know, put fresh soil down and put. I usually get the fertilizer.
Quick answer, John.
Yeah, the whole idea is you got to make sure you let it long enough. It's got to be 4 weeks of solarization, or it's not going to work. And the second thing is take that same solarized soil and mix it up, turn it over. Don't put new soil because the new soil may not be clean.
Okay.
Okay, and what I'm doing is I'm forwarding all the emails we didn't get to mastergardener@broward.org. Mm-hmm. And again, all the callers we didn't get to,
mastergardener@broward.org. Send us, I'll put in the subject line WLRN question, and we'll look for you. And send pictures if it's an identification issue, send several, or just tell us what your questions are, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
Yep.
And again, the number 954-357-2121 or 5121.
5121, yes.
Our lead producer, Richard Ive, technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. Polly Landis is associate producer. And we have free audio archives at our website, WLRN.org. Tune in for tomorrow's edition for some hopeful information about cancer research. We'll visit with the director of the UM Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center for Lowdown on Cancer Moonshot 2020. He's Dr. Stephen Nimer. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.